streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
I'm Kim Reynolds of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. More position previews, recruiting going on this weekend, a new commit for University of Washington football team, and more. But, just getting down to the positions. Scott, you broke down the offensive tackles just this last day or so, but it's kind of up in the air. What's going on with Jackson Kirkland?
Yeah, I think a lot is going on here. By the way, Chris was the one who did the tackles, but as far as Jackson Kirkland, I mean, I think we're working off of the assumption that until we find out one way or the other from the NCAA whether he'll be allowed back or not, we're going to go with the fact that he might not be, that he's probably not coming back until we find out that he is. But if that's the case, man, it's huge for Washington. I think it would be better if he slid back inside and played guard, but that doesn't sound like it's going to be the case if he is allowed back.
And either way, guys, either way, it's kind of a moot point. Even if Jackson Kirkland does come back, which I think there's still a very strong possibility that could happen, it's not going to affect anything that happens in spring. I mean, Scott Huff is still going to need to get guys ready in case he doesn't, because you hope for the best. You want to see a guy with that kind of talent and ability come back for one more year, but they have to plan like he's not going to be around. And the reality is, in April, he's not going to be around.
Chris, who takes the first rep at left tackle, for spring?
Well, it's going to be really, really interesting, because you would think Troy Fautanu would be, because he's the incumbent guy. He's the one that started games at left tackle. You know, he was the guy not named Jackson Kirkland that was a starter there. But you've got Roger Rosengarten that's really nipping on his heels. Roger's a guy that we saw play both sides, got a chance to work and get reps and turns at both left and right tackle a year ago. So I think that's really going to help him, his versatility. And obviously he's a great athlete. You've got guys like RJ Wirsch coming through the pipeline. I don't think he's going to get the first rep. I would have to say, I would think it'd be Fautanu, but would it surprise me if it was Roger Rosengarten? Not at all.
I think there's a very good chance you'll see Fautanu slide inside the guard. So, if you're trying to get your best five on the field, it might be Rosengarten at left tackle and Fautanu at left guard.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I could see that happening, once the games start, because that's assuming Jackson Kirkland comes back. But mm-hmm. for right now, I think you have to prepare Fautanu. Like, he's going to be a left-sided player regardless, because I do agree with you, Scott, that if Kirkland does come back, they still want to get their best guys on the field, as you mentioned. So sliding a guy like Fautanu back inside, because he's played left guard before, that would make a lot of sense too, especially now that MJ Ale has moved to the defensive side. You've still got a lot of bodies there. You've got Nate Kaleppo there. You've got guard Memelar there inside that you could work on. But I think, again, if the operating assumption is you're trying to get your top five guys in there, you would think Kirkland outside, Fautanu inside, if everything comes together for the fall.
Yeah, but Scott, one of the things I'd like you to do is, I know that they really like Roger Rosengarten. I know they really like Troy Fautanu. But I also know they really like Mateo Mele. When you're taking a look at Fautanu mm-hmm. and Mele, can you compare those two?
Well, Fautanu, Mele has your prototypical left tackle, right tackle size. He's about almost 6'6", and he's about 300 pounds, like right on the money. He's got good feet, played tight end in high school, got converted to O-line once he got to his senior year, and then has been at O-line with Washington. He's also played some center for Washington. He started for Nick Harris against Eastern Washington back in 2019. So, the guy has experience playing some other positions, but I like Mateo Mele at right tackle and moving Vic Kern inside to play guard. It isn't that I think Kern is horrible, but I just think I like that length on the edges a little bit more than Kern, who's about 6'3", 6'4". Same with Fautanu. I think those guys could be a great guard tandem. But with as far as Fautanu is concerned, he's got a guard body, but because of his good feet and because he's got really, really long arms, I think it was 80 inches plus in the length of his arms. Everybody have said that he can play left tackle pretty easily. And so I think that's kind of, kind of the reason for the thinking of him being out at tackle. I still think guard for Fautanu, but you could see either one of those guys out there.
And Chris, could you see Nate Kalepo or who's the big guy from Hawaii?
Julius Bulow.
Yeah. Could you see either of those playing tackle?
I think they were both tried out at tackle. I mean, I remember that Kalepo was in the depth for the Vegas Bowl at tackle. And then Bulow was obviously at right tackle for a while. But clearly, over time, they've been moved inside. So I don't know if they're – I think their time at tackle has already kind of come and gone. Because if you're looking at the right side, again, as Scott mentioned, you've got Kern, you've got Mele, and then you've got Samuel Peacock, who's behind those two guys. You've got guys that are kind of in the waiting in the wings, and they've got some guys there. There's no question you've got a lot of tackle bodies in the room, And the old adage is it's much easier to move a guy from tackle inside than it is to move a guy from guard outside. And so Scott mentioned the sizes of Kern and Fautanu, for instance, but we've seen it happen before. A guy like Senio Calamete, same body type, was a phenomenal tackle. So I think that you have to kind of put the intangibles in there too when you're looking at who is the best guy for the position, not just kind of the cookie cutter, you need a guy 6'6 and above, or, you know, I think it's the footwork. I think it's all the other things that you put into it that really – kind of when you start to narrow down who are the best guys that can play out on an island like that.
Hey, Scott, you know, I've got to think the odds are unfavored of Jackson Kirkland coming back are really good. I think there's a really good shot for him coming back. Now, if you're the coaching staff and you're Scott Huff and you think that you're going to get Kirkland back, but he's not going to be able to participate in spring ball, how do you handle that? You know, when you're talking about a Troy Fautanu, you know, who might be the leader to, you know, play that left tackle spot if he doesn't return, do you put him inside and maybe start your second team offensive tackle like Roger Rosengarten out there, knowing that, you know, to get him as many reps out there as you can, knowing that he'll be the second team guy if Kirkland does come back, and making sure Fautanu is getting used to that inside position? How would you approach that?
Yeah, I think you got to get Roger Rosengarten some reps with the first unit, because, you know, who knows if Jackson will be able to stay healthy. I mean, a guy being able to remain healthy and play an entire season nowadays almost seems like a rarity anymore. You know, he's going to miss a game here, a game there with a sprained ankle, a thumb issue, a hamstring, whatever it is. I think you got to get Roger Rosengarten as many reps at left tackle as possible, but you also need to get Fautanu some reps there as well, because I really think that you need to make sure that you have that left tackle spot nailed down, regardless who's in there. So I think if they feel like Jackson Kirkland's coming back for one more year, and it's going to happen, I think, Kim, you are right. I think you move Fautanu inside, let him get reps at left guard, solidify that, let Roger Rosengarten get the reps at left tackle. And then when Jackson Kirkland is ready to come back and is healthy and all that stuff, then you just ease him in, and he's got the experience. He's got what 15 games, whatever he's played out there at left tackle. And then whatever he's had at right guard, he's got a lot of experience. So he should be able to move in there relatively easily. You know, he's going to be probably a quick study on the offense. So I think, yes, Kim, if they feel like Jackson Kirkland is coming back and they've got a great chance to get him back, I think you will see Fautanu inside at left guard, and I think you will see Roger Rosengarten playing getting most of the reps with the first unit at left tackle.
I have a quick thought on this.
Scott, I just want to add one quick thing. If we see Roger Rosengarten take the first reps with the one, does that indicate anything with Jackson Kirkland coming back?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think you can read one thing one way or the other, but because they could just feel that Rosengarten's ready to take over there and move Fautanu inside. There's that's always a possibility too.
Sorry to cut you off, Chris, but go ahead.
Well, no, it's okay. I'm just, my only thought on that is if you're looking to slide those things, you know, slide Fautanu inside for spring and give Rosengarten those reps, you know, my only thought is based on the level of certainty that Scott Huff is in terms of understanding where Jackson Kirkland is in the process and knowing if he'll be back, you know, you could throw a carrot to a guy like a Nate Kaleppo, because you just asked, you know, what's the possibility he could go back outside? Well, you could see a flip a little bit. You could get Troy Fautanu his reps at left tackle as an emergency guy, knowing that probably Rosengarten is going to be Kirkland's backup in the fall. But at the same time, you're still going to need that depth. So you could throw a carrot to a guy like Nate Kaleppo and say, look, Nate, we want you to get your reps inside, but we also think because you're just a left-sided player in general, we need you to get reps as well at tackle. So you could see some situations where it could be Fautanu and Kaleppo on a series of reps, and then you could flip them and you could see Kaleppo outside with Fautanu inside, so that they're hedging their bets, I guess, a little bit, you could say, in that way.
Chris, you know, we talk about the inside guys. You know, the biggest guy on the offensive line, MJ Alle, moved over to the defensive side of the ball. You know, tell me the impact of losing MJ Alle and what impact that has on the entire unit over on the offensive line.
Well, it has a big impact, but I think I get this sense, and I don't know if Scott agrees with me, but I just get this sense that Scott Huff has probably a different plan for these guys simply because of the revamp of the offense and how they're going away from certain strengths to other strengths. And they're going to be looking for different skill sets from these guys instead of what they were being asked to do in John Donovan's offense. You know, in Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb's offense, they're going to be asked to do different things. And so I think he might be, whether it's moving guys around or whether it's trying to emphasize other skill sets that these guys may be better at than they were last year. And that might be part of the reason why they weren't as good last year. You know, we'll see what happens with those guys, but there's no doubt it's center. When you lose Luke Wattenberg, you lose a starter like that, you know, the quarterback of the offensive line, that's a big blow, but they've got guys there that have some experience. I mean, Corey Luciano is kind of been waiting there in the wings to take that spot over, but they moved Garen Hatchett from guard inside to center to see what happens. And then Parker Brailsford's a guy that they recruited specifically, and you see a lot of Nick Harris type traits in Brailsford. So I think that position has some talent in it and it has some potential, but there's absolutely no doubt that the proof will be in the pudding when they start playing this fall, the real games, because you know, we have no idea how those guys are going to react. But having Henry Bainavalu back at right guard, for instance, that's big. And so you've got that starter back. You've got, Julius Buelow could play at left guard going again because he has experience there from last year. You know, this is the one thing about the offensive line, Kim. You've got a lot of talent, a lot of returners coming back. So we'll see how it fits. But I think Huff has some changes in mind, and I won't be surprised if there's some guys playing some different positions in spring.
You know, Scott, I think people sleeping a little bit on Henry Bainavalu coming back. I mean, he's a massive guy, but you know, you were also talking about, liking Victor Kern better at, on the inside than you did at tackle. So, you know, if let's say, you know, Victor Kern and Bainavalu both are playing guard. I mean, if you're going to have, can Bainavalu or Victor Kern, because they've both been on the right side, can either one of those switch to the left side?
Yes, I think they could. I think they're probably better on the right side. Bainavalu is real interesting because if he's healthy and 100% go, I think he's the most talented offensive lineman on Washington's roster. He's just got it all. He's got length. He's got size. He's got strength. He's got athleticism, good feet, all those different things. I think if he's 100% healthy, he's probably your best offensive lineman. But the problem is he had a knee issue, and that's why he walked last year. And he feels like he can come back. He feels like his knee is ready to go. I don't even know if he's had a procedure on it or he just got some rest on it and things like that. But, man, I don't know if he's going to be 100% healthy. And that's why I'd like to see Kern maybe be a backup right guard at this point in time and let Melee be outside at right tackle. So, you know, it's all such a fluid situation out there at pretty much every spot, honestly. And there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching. And when we're writing up, when Chris and I and Jack and maybe Matt are going to be writing up the practice reports, don't get all weirded out by the combinations that they have. I wouldn't read too much into them because I think they're going to be working on a lot of different guys, seeing what combinations work best, who handles what better, who is able to pick up blitzes better from left guard, maybe right guard, you know, all those different things. Scott Huff is going to have to be a mad scientist this. And Ryan Grubb, luckily he's got a old offensive line coach as the offensive coordinator because, boy, I think they're going to have to be mad scientists this spring.
Chris, you may disagree with me, but when you're looking at that center position, when, you know, you mentioned the, you know, the backup of Corey Luciano and then Garen Hatchett, who would be a redshirt freshman, I'm just having a tough time seeing either one of those being the starting center. And the guy that I keep on looking at that position is a guy who's actually had a start there is Mateo Melee. Do you see, you know, the battle between Luciano and Hatchett, or do you see somebody like Melee or somebody else possibly moving into that position?
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, Melee started at Arizona back in, what, 2019? So he has that one start under his belt, but you know, it just goes, and you may absolutely be right, Kim. That could be one of the wild card moves that Scott Huff has in his back pocket because he knows what Melee can do. He maybe wants that veteran leadership right away. He may move him back in. I mean, Melee's been a bit of a unicorn in the sense that, you know, we haven't really seen a guy that's moved around that much from center to tackle since Coleman Shelton. And those guys just aren't, you know, they don't come around all that often. And so if he did move back inside, then obviously now you've got to wonder, would you move a Bulo back outside? Would you, you know, who would be the backup right tackle at that point? Who would you use? Would you play Rosengarten over there, for instance? Because we know that he's taken reps on both sides. But at center, yeah, I mean, that could be one of the wild card moves. I think Luciano has all the traits that you would want in the center. But he just hasn't done it yet. That's the biggest problem. None of those guys, outside of what you're talking about in Melee, none of those guys have actually been able to do it yet. They just have flashed a lot of talent and a lot of potential at this point. So we'll see what happens. Cause the other guy, to be honest with you, in your ramp up to who you were going to talk about, I honestly thought you were going to be talking about Miles Morrell because Miles Morrell is the guy that really came in and he was the one that was supposed to challenge Nick Harris when Nick Harris was still here. And then he got moved to guard and now he's been kind of one of the odd men out. And I'm wondering if now Huff spies an opportunity for Miles Morrell to get right back in the mix and really kind of assert himself because he's one of the most talented guys and one of the highest rated offensive linemen that they've had in a good while. And that's saying something considering Scott Huff has done a really good job recruiting.
And Scott, we haven't seen anybody take reps over the last couple of years, you know, Wattenberg, you know, moved inside and then we've seen Garrett Hatchett and Corey Luciano take reps at center, but I've never seen Miles Morrell take a rep at center, and I've never seen, in all of last year, I didn't see Mateo Melee take a rep at center. Am I missing something, or did you ever see anybody else take a rep at center other than those guys?
I think you're 100% correct, Kim. I don't remember ever seeing those guys take reps at center last year. Now, the thing is, we didn't get to see practice in 2020, so did they do that and then get moved because of different – what John Donovan was looking for, Jimmy Lake or whatever. So, you know, I mean, the nice thing is the slate is clean for a lot of these guys. So the coaches are going to – now, granted, the offensive line is going to have Scott Huff in there to kind of see what they're doing. But maybe the center is asked to do something a little bit different. And so that's why Miles Morrell might get a little bit more of a look. But I think you're going to see Parker Brailsford in there before you'll see Miles Morrell. I think Washington wants Miles – Morrell out there at right guard, which is where he'd been backing up. He was with the third team last year, might be with the third team this year, but he looks like a different guy. At least when I saw him in the season, he looks completely trimmed down. He's about 330 now, moving really well, was able to, you know, get after guys in the running game and everything like that. And I think we're going to see Miles Morrell. If anyone's going to make a move this spring and in summer along the offensive line, that's the guy who I think could do it. I think Garen Hatchett's got a slight chance to do it, but I think Luciano's probably your starter at center, at least to start the season. We'll see how that goes. Because a lot of that's going to depend on Luciano is, can he get his snaps down? Because if you guys remember last spring and fall, his snaps were all over the place. And this offense is going to be primarily out of the shotgun. So you got to have those snaps down. And so where's Hatchett at? Where's Morrell at? Where's Luciano's snaps at? So I think you'll see a lot of guys rotate through there. I think Morrell could see some reps there, but right now I think right guard is probably where he's going to be at.
And Chris, last year, you know, taking a look at spring practice or fall ball, the guy who struggled the most with the shotgun snaps was Corey Luciano. I mean, it just seemed like two or three per practice, you know, that were just really bad.
Yep. No, that's a fact. I can't add much more to that. That's 100% accurate.
Moving over to the tight end position, I think that you know, we had a chance to talk to, you know, ZTF a couple weeks ago, and I asked one guy on offense to really keep an eye on, and he said Devin Culp. And I think, Scott, you've known Devin for a long time. He played basketball, football. He's a really good athlete. And is this kind of just the chance that a lot of people are looking for that are playing football? Is just the chance to break out? Because it sure looks like, you know, Devin Culp's got that chance to be the guy, and he's just got to go take it and run with it.
Yeah, I think this is his opportunity to earn that starting spot, because I think Quentin Moore is going to be a guy to contend with, and I think that Jack Westover is going to be a guy to contend with as far as what Culp is looking to do. You know, Culp had that really good game against Cal where he caught, what, 5 passes for like 89 yards. But he's been hit and miss. I think more hit recently than miss, but still some hit and miss issues. And his blocking has not been up to par. But that's the thing, is that the Fresno State coaches like to spread their tight ends out a little bit more. And that's what suits Devin Culp just fine. So you could see some 12 personnel with Devin Culp moving out to like the slot rather than being on the line and put Westover or Quentin Moore on the line. So it'll be interesting to see the different combinations that they use. Nick Sheridan's the position coach over there. And I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be able to work some magic with those guys. I really, really like the body types and the number of bodies that they have at the tight end spot. So now it's just going to be figuring out how they're all going to be used and how they can get each one of them reps, because I think Washington has done pretty well in recruiting that position. Ryan Otten doesn't come in until the fall. And, I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to need at least a year of seasoning. He's not like his brother who could play pretty quickly. I think he's going to need at least a year in the weight room and just getting used to playing a real tight end role, where he's able to do both, be a receiver and be a run blocker. But, you know, Quentin Moore, Devin Culp, you've got, some other interesting, you know, body types out there with Nathan West and trying to remember the guy from Eatonville. He's totally drawn
Caden
a blank.
Jumper.
Caden Jumper. Yeah, you got some different body styles and things like that. And you also got Zeke Pelur, who I think had a really good spring and fall last year and played a lot on special teams. You know, could he see some time this year? I think there's just a lot of things up for debate to see who ends up where and how many reps get thrown at these different guys.
Hey, Chris, the guy who's got the most experience, both played the most games, most experienced guy in that unit is Jack Westover. But last year, I asked Jimmy Lake, is he a fullback or is he a tight end? And Jimmy Lake was pretty adamant he was a fullback. Is he a fullback this year or is he a tight end?
Well, if I remember correctly, he took the first third down carry against Oregon State in the 2020 season. So they kind of featured him pretty early on, if I remember right. He only played 7 games last year, so we didn't get a chance to see the best of him, obviously. I'd say the nice thing is that Devin Culp got a chance to play in all 12 games. It was really good for him to get a full season, to really get solidified and create that foundation that now he can kind of push on from. Because if you look at the stats, even though Cade Otton only played 8 games, you know, he had – Cade Otton had more catches, but Culp had more yards per catch. He had the same number of touchdowns. He had longer catches. So he's got the potential to have an Otton-like impact in the receiving game if he allows himself to be that kind of guy. Where it's going to be different is that Otton clearly is an asset when it comes to run blocking. And that's something where Culp and Westover and all these other guys are going to have to kind of follow his lead, Cade Otton's lead, and be that guy that can be versatile and can kind of do it all. And that's going to be the real challenge. I think they can go out and catch balls. I don't think there's going to be a problem there. Quentin Moore obviously has that kind of potential. But, you know, there was going to have to be some attrition at that position because they just simply weren't going to be as featured as they were under John Donovan. They knew they were going to lose Cade Otton, but losing a guy like Mark Redman probably was going to happen given the nature of this offense. And, you know, I think 7-8 tight ends is probably about the max that you're going to see with this particular offense under DeBoer and Ryan Grubb.
And Scott, the guy that you know probably better than Chris and I, Quentin Moore, I think has the highest upside of anybody in that room. Unfortunately, he was just dinged quite a bit last year.
Yeah, don't disagree with you. I think he's probably got the most upside of anybody in the room. Can do it all, really. Was an average blocker in high school, but I've seen some things from him that show me that he's been working hard at it. And the coaches really liked his progress as a blocker last year. I think there's going to be some opportunities for him to make plays this year. And what's going to be real interesting is, like you said, Kim, can he stay healthy? Because if he's healthy, I think he's probably the most talented of the guys in that room. And that's a talented room. But, I mean, 6'5", 245, 250 pounds, can run down the middle, really stretch the field with his athleticism, can jump and, you know, is explosive as an athlete, soft hands. He's got it all. He just needs to put it all together. And if he can stay healthy, I think we'll see the best of Quentin Moore this year.
And Scott, is this a year for a breakout where Mason West really needs to make a move?
Yeah, it really is. And I could see a situation where if he doesn't feel like he's getting playing time, he could possibly leave this after spring ball. But, you know, I mean, he was a guy that comes out of La Habra High School. He's 6'4", 250 pounds, whatever it was. And he could be that hybrid fullback guy if you really need him to be. But he was used to catching passes in high school, and he hasn't gotten that chance so far. So does he get more reps? Is he able to earn more reps? It's a new tight ends coach. It's a new position coach. Does he have a chance? And I think a lot is going to be told to us throughout the spring, throughout the month of April. If he's not getting a lot of looks, he is a definite candidate I could see for someone who might decide to move on.
Mason West, Caden Jumper, are they the same guy?
No, a little bit different. Caden Jumper's shorter.
Jumper's more of a Swiss Army knife.
He's more of an athlete. Yeah, he can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, he played quarterback for Eatonville. I mean, he played a lot of different positions, and Mason West, I think, was featured more just as a straight tight end when he was in high school.
Yeah, I'm showing them both listed at 6'3", you know, Caden Jumper at 240, Mason West at 250. So, I mean, body-wise, they seem like the same kind of guy, but definitely something to keep an eye on with Caden Jumper. We really haven't had a chance to see much of him or Mason West. But let's take a quick break from our sponsors, and we return. Big commit for University of Washington this weekend, as well as a big football camp that we'll be at as well. Back in a moment. It's the guys from Dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back. I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund, Dogman Radio, and just a lot going on. And with spring football kicking in and recruiting definitely picking up, but big commit this week, Scott, from a running back. Had offers from USC, Cal. I can't remember who else, but had a handful offer, but impressive on film.
Absolutely impressive on film. Gets up to top speed really quickly. Can cut on a dime, puts his foot in the ground, gets downhill really quick. I like the kid a lot. Now, you know, Washington.
By the way, his name's Tybo Rogers.
Yeah, it's Tylan Tybo Rogers. He's on the commit list, so just go look at it. But, special player out of Bakersfield High School, plays against some really good teams in that area. It's more of a, I think it's, where is Bakersfield? It's not Inland Empire, right? It's Valley. Is it more Valley?
No, it's sure. Elliott Zajac High School, isn't it?
What?
Isn't it Elliott Zajac High School?
Oh, well. I don't know about that, but
I'm going back away.
Yeah, you
are. The only
ways.
Bakersfield guy I remember was Nathan Rhodes, but I think he was from a different high school there.
Yeah. So Bakersfield is a pretty big city. So
yeah.
But you know, I mean, just I was really impressed when I watched his film, and I knew Lee Marks had kind of honed in on him and made him a big time target. The real question is, does that leave room for Jaden Lemar, the running back prospect out of Lake Stevens, probably top running back in the state? You know, I don't know. I think they will end up taking two, and I know they're recruiting Jaden Lemar, but they're also looking at some other 2023 guys too. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
How good of a get is that, Scott?
It's big. It's their first one for the class. That helps. He's a talented kid who had offers from pretty much most of the Pac-12, that he could have gone to. And I think Washington, did a really good job of focusing on him, getting him in the boat. And, he's already said he's going to start working on some of his 7-on-7 teammates and guys that he knows in the area, and also his little brother, which I don't know how much that guy's going to be recruited, but, you know, I mean, it's a good get for Washington. I really like what he brings to the table.
Chris, you had a chance to look at this film. Any scouting report, anything you like about what you saw?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, you know, seeing him run and knowing where he's from, it feels like a quintessential Fresno State type running back, like a Ronnie Rivers type back. He's got the one cut and go. Not like super top end speed, but fast enough to get the job done. Really versatile, can catch the ball really, really well out of the backfield. I think some people were wondering if he was going to be a receiver as well as running back. And I think they're going to show a lot of versatility with him. But yeah, I mean, he's a very good running back who got offers from 9 out of the 12 Pac-12 teams. And you know, he's a guy, again, you mentioned Kim, USC offered him, a number of big time schools offered him, and it's a good early get. And you want to get some of those offensive guys in the boat. And, you know, I was surprised you guys were talking about, Jaden Lemar. I was, you know, a little surprised that there wasn't some running back attrition in last year's, you know, going into 2022. And I just feel like it's got to hit the wall and there's got to be some attrition that's going to allow Washington to sign more than one running back in this class. I just get that sense.
Scott, big football camp coming up this weekend. Tell people a little bit about what's going on there.
So it's the National Preps football camp, and it's the college showcase that they are doing in different regions. This week it is Washington, and they're going to be up at on the Tulalip Reservation and doing workout out of the camp out there. They're going to be going all day, but the one that we're going to be focused on is the later session. That's when most of the top 2023 guys, maybe a few 2024 guys are going to be there working out, doing different stuff. And it'll be a chance for us just to get out, network a little bit, see some of the guys in person running around doing their thing, but also do some interviews. So hopefully I'll have, you know, 4, 5, 6 interviews out of that, and maybe get you guys some intel from that as well.
Yeah. Did you hear the alarm go off in my hotel room, by the way?
Yes, I did.
I have no idea what that was. I don't see any smoke coming out the buildings, and I'm not smelling anything, so I think I'm okay.
All right.
anything else to add, Chris?
No, other than maybe it might be wise for you to get out of your hotel room here pretty quick. So maybe we should start wrapping it up.
Yeah, no, I plan on getting out and getting out for a walk. And by the way, there was like 50 mile an hour winds in Vegas, the night of the basketball game, and it was cold. It's not real warm down here in Vegas right now. So last minute thoughts, Scott.
Last minute thoughts, good pickup for Washington as far as Tyball Rogers is concerned. Excited to get back out on the road and see more of these kids at these camps. And I like where Washington's at tight end and at along the offensive line. Now it's just going to be putting it together. The nice thing for Kalen DeBoer is that I think this team massively underachieved last year. So if he and his staff can get in here and really motivate these guys to get going and reach their potential, this team has a chance to do some damage this year in the Pac-12. Could they win the Pac-12 North? Always a possibility. But I think this year is going to be a little bit more of a struggle than maybe Husky fans would want to see. But I still think 7, 8, 9 wins is definitely doable if they get some progress from the team and from the quarterback position. If you get that, everything else kind of falls into place, at least offensively.
Yeah, just a little tidbit. Chris, you've done a great job of keeping the coaching salary database up to date, and we pretty much got everything. And I'm not sure if we got Ron McCaffrey's or not. Did we get one on the strength and conditioning coach, Ron McCaffrey?
Not yet, but we're supposed to.
Okay, well, let me tell you why you haven't got it yet. first of all, everybody I talk to raves about this strength and conditioning guy. He's got NFL ties, and you've heard Coach DeBoer rave about him. We're just hearing nothing but positive things, and we've also heard that he's making substantially more money than Tim Saha did because he is that good. But the reason we haven't got it is because they had to make a little bit of a change in his contract. It sounds like once he got here, some schools that were in the college football playoffs came after him pretty hard, so he got a little bit of a bump. So hopefully we'll be getting that shortly, but hearing great things about the new strength and conditioning program. Scott, you're hearing the same stuff I am too, right?
Yes, I am, definitely. I've heard it from several parents, a couple of whom are trainers, like physical trainers, so they know about the dynamic things that he's doing and with the way he's training these guys and how he's really motivating him and stuff like that. He's the off-season head coach, really, if you think about it, because he's the one that the kids get to spend the most time with. And he's the one who has to kind of set the tone, and that's what he's done. The players all love him, supposedly. They're working their butts off is what I've been told. Some of these guys are just drenched in sweat when they're done, and that's not a bad thing, for these guys to be pushed pretty hard this during the off-season.
Yeah, so just a little bit of a tidbit there, and as soon as we get a copy of that contract, we'll go ahead and get all the information up to you guys. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.